maybe this is fast forward 24 hours and you're like, listening in the shower on the podcast feed. I appreciate all of you. All of you. Good on you. And away we go. And we made it to effing July, baby. Oh, this is where I get excited. I know everybody else. Oh, man. What do we got? We got the All-Star game, Jeff? What do we got? No, we got real football-related conversation. And it doesn't feel, maybe a little forced on occasion. Maybe. But it's not so far out of left field. You know, we're not months away. You know, I'm big on the way things sound. So when you, as we've said before, Tom, when you're able to say that, you know, next week is Big 12 Media Days. Well, hello. All right. That's pretty cool. Next week it is. And when you're able to say the week after that, not that I care as much, is SEC Media Days. Obviously, we follow up and I'll be in Charlotte and get an opportunity to talk to Coach Norvell and be interested to see who they take, right? I think we know, obviously, it would seem to me that they're going to take DJ. And then I would think from there, I don't believe it's been announced. So I would guess from there, you'd probably, well, you have two other players. I forget that there's three now, right? So what do you think, is Farmer?
Old Batted Balls, I think they'll take.
Old Batted Balls, Peyton. Makes more sense. You're right. That's right there.
They could take Shaheem. They could take Azarie. They could take Malik Benson. They could take Darius. All good options. They could take, I mean, those are all really good options for different reasons.
Yeah, it's a little bit of how much have you played, what position do you play, and how well are you at adapting to, you know, questions when you're being peppered by the media. You know, I mean, I don't think there are some kids who really shy away from that and just don't like it. And we've seen kids that have to go up there that really don't want to go, but they're such high profile players that you can't leave them behind, or they're a quarterback. And you're like, yeah, man, yeah. Jordan Travis is quiet. I don't think he loves that give and take in that setting, right? But you're not going to take Jordan Travis. You had to. And he did well, and he got better at it as he went along. And over time, he became more refined. But some guys are just would rather not do it. Others are hams, and they're really good representatives, and they're fantastic with the media, and it's a no-brainer. I just like that it's this month, and it's a reason to continue to talk football and talk rosters and talk matchups and the implications. And, of course, we've already mentioned recruiting. Florida State had a very good week last week. Figures to have a very good week this week. You know what popped up during the break? I don't always get an opportunity to read what's happening in the chat when I'm doing the show because I'm busy doing the show. But I do want to occasionally, just in case, you know, somebody asks a pertinent question or an interesting one or so adds to the subject, or I like to see what you guys are chit-chatting about. Can somebody tell me why the hell Paul Feinbaum came up today? Why is this coming up? Why is Paul Feinbaum, of all people, coming up? None of us should care anything about what he has to say. What happened? Did he take another cheap shot at Florida State? You don't say. But did that happen? I don't know. I have zero, but it was all in the chat here, so I figure something must have come up.
I watch it more because you're doing the show and you're speaking for more, right? So I get a chance to review it. Although you've been really quick on the ban hammer the last couple of weeks. I like that about you.
Man, I'm rich with the quickness.
Yeah, I'll make a point. I'll come back and say, "Woo, he blocked two people. My goodness, look at him go."
You got time for nonsense.
I don't know. I've long since, well, I mean, I gave up forever ago, so I don't want to make it sound like it was recent. If it comes up on the timeline or if it comes up on the boards at War Chant and it's this big thing, then perhaps I might review it. But I certainly am not going to capture the moment that Paul Feinbaum says X, Y, and Z because ESPN's on my television screen at home in the morning. Like, that's just, it's not in the cards. I'm not there for the panel discussion with Mike Greenberg, Paul Feinbaum, and Heather Dinich about anything. Never will be. Never, ever will be. So if he says something on those programs, I'll have to get it third hand. And I don't know of anything he said.
I guess he said we don't belong in the Big Ten because of academics, as if academics are driving the train of assets for television contracts. He knows that's just a reason to take a shot. It's an effort to take a shot is really what it is. It's kind of comical. It's just meant to get under your skin. And then the other part of that is he said he didn't add value to the SEC, but he's also said that the perfect landing spot for FSU would be the SEC. So, you know, that's who you're dealing with. Yeah. I mean, you're dealing with somebody who's just whatever his the temperature is in the moment or what he's told to say. He carries water. Carries water for the organization who tells him what to talk about. There you go. And when he's not really talking, he's allowing dummies talk to each other and argue amongst each other. Mouth breathers in the South screaming back and forth about why their team is better while he sits at a table. It's talentless.
Like this. He stands like that. It's very strange.
But kudos to him for making millions of dollars being talentless.
He's like, it's like the emperor, man. And he's in no way got that kind of charisma as Ian McDermott. But I'm just saying when he was standing on the roof at Florida State some time ago, I think it was the 2012 Clemson game. He was there. He was on the roof. He's standing like this. I'm like, what? And there's no railing. I'm like, what is
what's he doing? I'm not gonna do the ad hominem. It's easy. It's easy. Oh.
I'm just saying it's
an observation. I'm not mad at you, brother. I'm not going to do it because then I get on a roll and I've run into him numerous times and I just don't even, I'm not doing it.
What's he going to do? He's held every stance on Florida State and their future. He's held every single stance he has held and argued for at some point. To me, if it is in fact true, and I've got no reason to not believe the folks in the fine Heisen Legal Law Firm chat, that he says if Florida State doesn't offer value to the Big Ten, that would suggest to me that Sankey and the power brokers at ESPN are a little concerned. That why would you even say that? Why would you even bring that to the table?
Well, we get into this every time we get into the discussion about where Florida State will land. Kelly in the chat did ask, Jeff, do you think when Florida State leaves, if Florida State leaves, that they will land in the SEC? I have said from the first day that we could have this conversation and I could really kind of think about it for a minute and begin to formulate an opinion. And certain things had to happen before you could even have this conversation realistically. But once they did, once Florida State announced its lawsuit, for example, then I thought, all right, well, so it begins. Now we're going to have real conversations about how this plays out. And I can tell you that people in the know, people in the industry, we're doing the exact same things that just like average fans at a diner or bar are doing in terms of the tit for tat debate about what Florida State adds to either one of these conferences or doesn't, or why either one of these conferences would or would not want Florida State. We've had that. We've all gone through the machinations. It's kind of fun. It's kind of fun to do. It's great to hear other informed opinions about why or why not the Big Ten. Same for the SEC. Ultimately, I just continue to fall back on and ask the question over and over again about the acquiring of assets in a Super 2. So if you're creating in what is inevitably going to be, 48 teams in a Super 2, I'm just using that number arbitrarily, but somewhere in that ballpark, okay? Then it really isn't about a conference. It's not really about the Big Ten or the SEC. It's about Fox and ESPN vying for assets. Florida State is 100% in any measurable way a Super 2 asset, a massive Super 2 asset, much more so than the vast majority of the other 48 teams or 47 teams that we're talking about, right, if it gets to that point. If that's the number, it could be 55, could be 60, whatever you want to say, right? When we look at tiers and we look at what brings value to the next mega television contract and we're trying to acquire assets that would demand more money because of more eyes on sets, Florida State is a prized get. An absolute prize get. There aren't many that you would want more. There are some. Florida State's not number one on that list. I'm not trying to say that. But there aren't many that you would want before you'd want Florida State. So let's just be done with the biases that we all hold, right? So everybody went to school somewhere. Everybody's from somewhere. Everybody knows somebody who went to school. We all have our reasons for why we root, like, dislike, all kinds of teams. Paul Feinbaum, absolutely. Falls under that umbrella. We all do, frankly. But if you remove those emotions and the reasons that, you know, maybe you went to school there or you're from there or you live in the community, whatever, if you remove those things that cause you to give an emotional response, and then you just objectively say, well, who are these 48 assets? Who are these prized assets? Well, again, you're not going to count too many teams before you get to Florida State. So it doesn't matter if I or Paul Feinbaum or anybody else think that Florida State does or does not bring academic value to the Big Ten or more eyes on sets to the SEC. What matters is, what do these two mega television networks, Fox and ESPN, think would make them the strongest? And you damn right, if Fox could put a flagpole in the South and grab an asset like Florida State and Clemson and North Carolina, throw in Miami maybe, you're going from Los Angeles to Miami, and you've got assets like Clemson and Florida State to go along with, well, let's assume down the line, Notre Dame joins, and now you've got Michigan, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Southern Cal, Oregon, Washington, Florida State, Clemson, forget about it. Why would you, if you're ESPN, allow for it? You wouldn't. You wouldn't do it. You wouldn't let them come in and grab Florida State and Clemson and possibly North. You wouldn't do it. I don't believe. Now, it's more complicated than that. And I do think that negotiations between the two, collusion of some sort, if you would, could absolutely happen. All right, listen, you take so-and-so, it's more on your footprint, we'll let you have it, fine. But we want whatever rights to playoffs in the future, however you want to look at it, right? I mean, broadcasting rights for certain things. That kind of horse trading could absolutely be happening. Probably is right now. So a commissioner of a league, of a Big Ten and of an SEC, a Sankey, for example, do they have sway? Do they have influence? Do they have real power? Yeah. Do athletic directors? No, not anymore. And I've said this before, again, as they continue to grow, as their strength, their power, meaning these programs, continue to grow because they're part of the money conferences, the SEC or the Big Ten, then the less say their athletic directors actually have. They'll be told what they're going to do by the networks. I'm not saying that athletic directors don't have a say in certain other aspects about how athletic programs are run. No, they're still very important. But in terms of big decisions like this, it's going to be a network that kind of decides the deal. I would think if you're Michael Alford and you're Florida State, you're trying to position yourself to have that be a real battle. You probably, A, didn't file a lawsuit without a wink, wink, nod, nod deal in place, an understanding in place. Probably don't file that lawsuit. Probably. And then secondly, I think that ideally what you'd want to do personally, I think this is what they might be trying to do. I don't know this, but I would leverage any sort of Big Ten offer I have or Fox offer I have against ESPN in the hopes that that would get them to come around. And then they would offer us to go to the SEC. Cause I think we want to go to the SEC. It makes too much sense to go to the SEC. You don't have to like the rest of the SEC and you can be as mad as you want to be at ESPN, but it just makes much more sense for Florida State to join the SEC than it does the Big Ten. And I think ultimately that's where Florida State will end up. And that's why I took the long-winded way of answering your question, Kelly. I think that's how this all plays out eventually. I could be wrong, and I will leave room for that because I think those that think they know are exactly where I'm at right now. They've got a pretty good understanding of the players, and they know certain people that are in a position to make very weighty decisions, but they don't know no. None of us know no. Now, there are television executives who might know. There are people at the highest levels of Fox and ESPN who might know. And they'd be the only ones. I don't think anybody else does.
Well, and the way those folks speak about these things is almost as though you're in a deposition or you're eating lunch. You know, for us, there's great conviction in our voices as we're trying to wish and hope and will Florida State to a better financial place so that the entirety of the athletics department's in a good spot. There's a lot of passion in our voice, and there's desperation in some circles in our voice. We got to get out of here if we want to be playing football the way that we believe we should be playing football. And for them, their mouth is half full. They're enjoying a Cobb salad, and they're like, yeah, well, I could do that. Then, you know, obviously, I mean, do you want the semifinals every other year, or do you not? I mean, you know, because you can have Florida State, but then you can't have the semifinals. What do you call it? I mean,
and so they're cutting.
Yeah. Now, don't worry, I'll pick it up. Put it on my tab. It's okay. Yeah. Put it on my tab. Now think about that. I mean, I'll go either way with you, but you can't have both. You can either have Florida State or you can have those semifinals every other year. It's your call. It's delicious salad, isn't it? That's how they're talking about us.
Yeah, very casually.
Meanwhile, we're on pins and needles looking at Michael Alford's emojis.
So Tom asked the question in the chat to my little soliloquy there. Are you saying FSU doesn't know right now where it's going? Yeah. I'm saying that they likely have an offer, which is what triggered them, amongst other things, to file the lawsuit because they know they would have a landing spot. But that doesn't necessarily mean they want to go there. I think they want to play the two against one another. This is what you do in any sort of job search, right? If you have two legitimate offers from two competing companies, both great, both are willing to meet your salary demands, both are, you know, try to put yourself in the best possible position to let them compete against each other for your services. If you are this great asset, and I think Florida State is an amazing asset. When I talk to the people at ESPN about the inner office emails that they get for broadcasts for college football, right? And they talk about a lot of things that are boring, frankly, and then a lot of other things that are just kind of interesting to us as casual fans, as football fans, as college football fans, pro football fans. You'd be surprised some of the things that are talked about in regards to the value of a game. Eyes on sets, what they think the ratings are going to be, what they're projecting for this broadcast, how they assign broadcast teams, all that sort of thing, right? The production value, all of it predicated on certain tiers that teams fall in. So you're obviously not sending the A team to cover, I don't know, Wake versus Syracuse. we're not going to send the best of the best this weekend to that Wake Syracuse game now, are we?
But right, Marty, they're both 5-0. They're both 5-0, Marty. We got to think about this. No, we don't.
We really don't, John. But I mean, so that's, yeah, they're going to assign their best. The guys in the truck, the guy on the field or the girl on the field, the two in the booth. The way that they hype it, the way that they promote it, the way that they talk about it, building up to it, the coverage, everything about it is based on what tier you fall in. Florida State's tier is an elite tier. It's not Notre Dame's tier. Really, nobody is. It's not Alabama's tier. But just below those tiers, like those two and maybe Michigan and maybe one or two others, there's Florida State right there, along with a bunch of other schools. We're there with Oklahoma and Texas and teams like that. We're right there. We're talking about royalty in college football. There's three or four at the very top that fall in those tiers that are massive assets. Massive. They're going to draw huge ratings anytime they play. And so they are of great value to a network. We have so-and-so. We got Michigan in our back pocket. We have got at least five games this year that are going to do massive numbers because we have them. All right. So now we're fighting over all these other guys that are huge, that are also guaranteed to do huge numbers. Who has the most of those? Who has the most of those? Can't have this? Fine, I'll take this. And I Florida State is in the position where they will be absolutely pursued by Fox and ESPN. And as Tom alluded to earlier, for all we know, it's already happened. For all we know, that conversation over a Cobb salad or a bacon has already happened.
I get this check. It's my tax write-off, right? Yep. Oh, it's delicious. It's delicious. More Pellegrino over here. Thank you.
I think it's because they do the dressing in-house. You know, you said that last time, John. I'm just every time. You can just tell. That's not out of a jar. Oh,
this is way better than that front nine you shot, right, buddy?
So what did we say? Clemson? Oh, no, FSU, Clemson? What are we going to... Oh, again, we got to do this? Another bottle? Chef Cameron, show 93.3 Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. Happy Bobby Bonilla Day, everybody. $1.19 million in the mailbox for one Bobby Bonilla as he got up this morning. And like I said, if I'm Bobby Bo, I don't want direct deposit. No. You mail me that check. I want to walk to that mailbox butt-ass naked. It's Bobby Bo Day, baby. I'd be walking out there swinging to that mailbox. Don't mind if I do. What do we have here, everybody? I would be insufferable. I'd be the camel on hump day.
Lest I forget that that's not all he gets. That the Orioles sent him $500,000 on top of it. So he gets $1.69 million per year because he's getting an extra half mil from Baltimore. And the Mets, we've leaned into it. The new owner.
Yes.
Wanted to have him every year hop in a convertible and drive around the stadium with the big check. They wanted to celebrate every
year. That's smart. It's smart.
Might as well.
I'd film him going to the mailbox. Not naked, of course, but I'd film him go to the mailbox. And I'd have the envelope and it'd be obvious. It'd say New York Mets and all that. Yeah. I'd have so much fun with it. By the way, so I looked this up because it's an amazing deal every year, but look at some of these other arrangements, some others that have done something similar that would stand out a little bit more than Bobby Bo. In fact, especially because of the player, Chris Davis, Tom, has a deal for the ages. He collects 59, Chris Davis collects $59 million in deferred payments during a 15-year stretch that started just last year and will continue through 2037. Davis, who just struck out again, will receive $9.16 million in 2024 and 2025. He'll receive $3.5 million every year forward from 2026 to 2032. And then, just when you think the fun's over, he gets $1.4 million from 2033 to 2037. It's a good day at Chris Davis's house, too. It's insane. It almost makes me angry because Chris Davis sucks. That's unbelievable.
As long as you're not looking to buy a couple of places in Lake Como immediately with the payment, you know, this is where the ownership group's like, we're a little cash poor. What do you think? We can make it up to you on the left side of the contract. It's over. You're done. You're still getting paid. If you have the self-control to say, I'm going to buy that mansion in Lake Como in 5 years. I just got to wait 5 years. Boy, this is a payoff.
I'll do you one better. Here you go. Here's the mother of all. Can you believe it? This past season, Shohei Ohtani deferred money was a big talking point. You may have read this in the Los Angeles Times, may have read this in the New York Times, wherever the hell you read it. I remembered reading it and went back to find it this morning because I wanted to see, was I remembering this correctly? All right. He has chosen to delay payments. Shohei Ohtani has. $680 million of his $700 million deal. People forgot he signed a $700 million contract. He only wanted $20 million of it up front. $680 million of it is deferred. He'll start receiving $68 million a year, Tom, beginning in 2034. So in 2034, he's going to wake up. Oh, yeah, this is when I make $68 million. What a day. What a day indeed. May start that day off with some champagne.
Would you have cut that deal? The way the world is, 2034 seems like a long way away, buddy.
So maybe something in between. I love the idea of deferred payments. I would tell you that if you said to me, because, I mean, he's in a prime of his career. He's got so many endorsement deals in Japan. He's making hundreds of millions of dollars. He's internationally known. He's one of the biggest stars in the game. So he's not going to ever, you know, it's not like he didn't even know Homeboy was legitimately stealing $2 million from him. He had no idea. And we know that's true because that guy just got convicted, pled guilty, and the record showed it. Like, or otherwise, he would have been charged. So he didn't have any idea that his friend was just stealing money and gambling. That's how rich Shohei Ohtani is. Just like, oh, $2 million. What's going on? So, golly, it'd be nice. You know how we lose? Like, sometimes you find a five in your jean pocket after you wash it. You're like, oh, $5? $2 million Shohei didn't even know was gone. He's like, what? What's going on? Dude was stealing, like steady stealing from you. Millions. He was? Never noticed. How incredible is that? So he's got, my point is he's already got all the money. All the money. So maybe I would. Maybe I would have just deferred it. I mean, I got to believe, I don't know what those endorsement deals in Japan are worth, but they got to be hundreds of millions of dollars.
It would have to be. Plus, you've been paid handsomely already in your baseball career to get to this point.
Right.
So you got endorsement deals. You've had baseball player contracts on two continents. And I think by definition, it has to be in that range in order for you to want to defer that much money. Because, look, you've been living in Cali for a long time, and taxes in Cali ain't exactly cheap. So a lot of your salary gets siphoned off to your agent. Whatever tax implications there are for your citizenship across two countries, California, you're basically paying another country's worth of taxes on top of your federal income taxes. So it goes away, even though it's a mountain of money, it gets reduced to a sizable hill. So those deals must be pretty high for him to defer and say, yeah, I can wait 9 to 10 more years before I start to make $60 million, $70 million a year.
You know, we've brought this up before. We're talking about money right now, and we got to take a quick break. And when we come back, I'll do it again as a reminder. Because today I mentioned what heady times we live in. What a big day for the ACC announcing Cal, SMU, and Stanford. Also, Texas and Oklahoma officially joined the SEC today. But something I was reminded of, and we talked about before, and I think it's the reason why Florida State can stomach a rather sizable sum. If they could just find out what it is to leave. And this has to do with the arrangement of teams leaving and joining other conferences. I'll touch on it momentarily. Jeff Cameron, Show 93.3, Real Talk Radio, War Chant TV. So I was mentioning before the break that we've talked about this before, but part of the ease with which Texas and Oklahoma make this move to the SEC is centered around the fact that ESPN is basically funding revenue sharing money for Oklahoma and Texas, and the SEC is not. You go back to a USA Today story. Oklahoma and Texas will be getting no money from the SEC's primary revenue sharing pool in 2024-2025, according to the school's entry agreements. However, they stand to collect millions through football and men's basketball specific distributions that already exist under the SEC bylaws. They could receive additional money through other specifically negotiated terms, and they will get what their agreements describe as transition payments. And that was key. If you remember when we read this, transition payments will be funded by ESPN. Go figure. Go figure. We get the asset. It's costly for you to go. We get it. We wanted you. We'll help ease your transition by giving you large sums of money to make up for what you're not getting from the pool of money in the SEC for your first 2 years.
That's where the decision for Florida State would come in. Like, you could argue that the networks have decided Florida State's fate.
Right.
Over a Cobb salad. Like, you could argue that that's a reality. You could also make an argument that Florida State will have a choice at some point. And if they do, I think these terms that you're describing right now are the concessions that they would look for, right? Correct. Mm-hmm. You're looking for full share if you're a big, let's say the Big Ten is the destination. I don't want that Oregon-Washington plan. Bro, I want
there. We're not Oregon and Washington. We're at a higher tier than Oregon and Washington. I'm not getting bent over like Oregon and Washington.
Yeah, exactly. We're offering you the Eastern time zone. You had the Western time zone with USC and UCLA, and you added two other teams. So that's why also, they
Florida State, not Oregon. We're Florida State, not Washington. I love Washington, but come on, who are we kidding?
Agreed. This is a much more valuable marketplace, much more valuable, and it's only getting more and more valuable as people cross over from different states into Florida by the year. So this is something that you pay a full share for. And if you can get that as the offer, then you run to the SEC or they give you a call because ESPN is very concerned. I've got to let you guys know, I'm very concerned about losing you. Well, do we get a full share or not there, Sonny? And, okay, you get a full share. Wonderful. Hold on. And then you call over to the Big Ten. How about a transition payment to help us pay off the ACC debts that we have? And you just keep going and see how much you can get.
You're going to work the best deal you possibly can. You know their lawyers are doing that. And that's, yeah, I want, we all do. I'd love Florida State to have a real tough decision to make. When you're in an untenable position, it's fun to fantasize about an amazing position of leverage. as they say, the best time to look for a job is when you have one. I would love for us to be in a situation that, look, we could choose either one, and then they both know it. That'd be great. Yeah. I don't know. That's above my pay grade. I'm not in the room for that. I don't know what's been wink, wink, nod offered up. You know, I don't know what that is yet. Again, I don't think that they would have. I don't think they would have stepped into the legalities of all this without some assurances that they had one of those two landing spots. We went from 0 to 60 in a hurry. And I think that had to do with, understood. And then, you hear people who are, I've said, either intellectually dishonest or stupid. One or the other. And you'll hear people say things like, well, I can assure you I've spoken to those in the league office at the Big Ten, and there has been no offer to Florida State. You hear people say that on shows. Like, they're like, we're all some sort of infant. Like, what? Yeah, right. Yeah, no official offer. Right, got it. So anyhow, I've heard it more than once, and I'm laughing driving down the road like, you can't be serious.
No, but hang on. I asked the question, though. I directly asked the commissioner of the conference. Like, I got through.
And they said, no? Really?
I called for weeks, and I was put on hold, and I was hung up on, and then they scheduled a time, and then the commissioner did not show up. But then I finally got him. And I said, okay, once and for all, is there an offer to Florida State? And they told me no.
Thanks for joining us on the show today, Heather. We'll talk to you again soon. Yeah. Can't even. It drives me nuts. And it happens all the time. I need to get this in there because it is accurate. It is something you need to think about, and it's something that could save you a lot of money. Tried and True Consulting, a payments and business solutions company owned by fellow Knowles. As a Knowles business owner, they're committed to reducing costs and increasing your bottom line. They give back 10%. That's Tried and True Consulting giving back 10% of their net revenue. That's right, to the Battle's End. Hit the trifecta today, scan the QR code, or call alumni's Don or Joe at 844-464-6653. That's 844-I'm-for-Knowles. Go Tried and True. Hey, did you see Clinton with the Battle's End on his sleeve this weekend?
I did.
Out there at the Rocket Mortgage?
I did. He had it on for the major as well. I believe he had it on for the U.S. Open. So, good job. I think we just got to coordinate with the company because he's got floral patterns. We might want a little patch behind it because I'm looking for it and I can find it. But he has been very, very impressive as Luke. I would hope he's coming back after all this success. He's not thinking about taking a chance.
I haven't spoken to him or Trey in the last 48 hours, so I don't really know. Finishing top 10 might change your mind.
Hope you didn't have money on Batia to win with those two brutal putts down the stretch.
That's a toughie. It's weird for a guy that's won twice on tour, though. You thought he was going for his first win. Like, what are we doing, my man? You've won on tour before. You've won in a playoff. It doesn't get more stressful than that. Come on, man. It's the Rocket Mortgage. It's not that big a deal. I know. Winning on tour is a big deal. I did have Minwoo Lee to win the entire tournament.
Oh. So that chip on the back of 18 was a bad moment.
Hurt my feelings when he went long. Well, the chip didn't bother me. It was just when he went long, he was dead. As soon as he went long, that was hit like a guy who has a lot of adrenaline about to win his first ever tournament. You know, I think that's it happened. But here's what I'll tell you: I had Minwoo Lee and I had Davis Thompson to finish in the top 10. I played top 10, top 20, top 5, and I had Minwoo to win. So it was a winning weekend for your boy. Winning weekend for your boy. I had six other guys, two that faced maybe money in top 20 market. And then four others that didn't make me any money that I lost the bets on. But luckily, when you bet people both ways, 5, 10, 15, and 20, and that hits, you win money.
So a couple of weeks have passed. I figured the situation settle down. On the Monday after the major, it's a little tougher. What's your take on Rory leaving, bolting, without speaking to the media?
Yeah, no, I it wasn't a good idea. The more I pondered it, the more I thought, don't do that. He's been so stand up with the media for years, just totally out of character. Now, essentially, it does reveal how devastated he was. It does reveal like how to the core crushed he was that because there's no, it's not the putt on 18. Everybody gets that wrong. The putt on 18 was wicked hard. The mistake was going past the hole. That was going to be a problem. But the putt on 16 is the one that is a total choke job. It's 2 feet with no break. He just yanked it. And that sucks. That sucks. That's tough. Because I think it's a different game. I think it's completely, if he doesn't do that, and the only putt that he misses is the one on 18, now Bryson's looking at a very different scenario than what he was looking at out of the bunker.
Yeah, correct. And a par means he'd have to hole out from the bunker in that situation.
Yes,
or he's deflated and defeated with that tee ball if it ends up where it did.
Right, in fact, right. Everything changes if he doesn't F up on 16. It's the one on 16. I don't think he'll ever, well, I shouldn't say never be bothered. I don't think he's gonna lose sleep at night about the putt on 18. It sucks, would have been nice to make it. It doesn't look good, but people know slippery left to right putts are no way to make a living from 3 feet. That's tough, man. You know that's tough. So I'll live with that one. He didn't hit it with very much conviction, but I'll live with that one.
That's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah. The one on 16 is the that.
The thing is, I think if he makes the putt on 18, he wins without going to a playoff as well. I think at that point, Bryson's energy, I mean, you've got two chances basically to close the door and you do anything. But
you said something on that Monday, though, and you know what? I thought about it some more later on too. Speaking of, I changed my stance on him, Bolton. I don't think he should have done that. But secondly, I do think you may be right. The last time he was so devastated, so crushed, and failed in a magnificent manner was the back nine at Augusta. It was all there for him, and he shot 80, and he throws that ball into places that nobody's ever seen at Augusta National off the tee, right? And he's sitting there leaning on his. Remember that leaning on his driver, looking like he's fighting back tears? Because he knows it's just all falling apart, and it's only you, and what a lonely stage, and how difficult that could be. And we've all had the yips. We've all had moments where our nerves got the best of us, and you can feel yourself unraveling, and there's nothing you can do about it. It's the worst. You're double-crossing yourself. You got a two-way miss. I don't even know where to go from here. I don't know where this ball is going. It's the worst feeling in the world. And that staring off in the distance look in his face in that moment, we thought, oh my God, he's screwed. And the very next major, he ended up boat racing the field. So I do think that while there's an awful lot of scar tissue and it's a different time, he's now a much older golfer. We lose our nerve as we get older. 10 years is a long time between majors. It's a long time. But he is a tough son of a bitch. He may just bounce back at the British. Who knows?
He might. It's just about putts down the stretch. Like, I'm never going to trust Cam Young. Will you? He's going to have to win a major by six. He won't win it by one. There's no way. The path to victory for Rory is through a blowout. It's a Brian Harman. You got to have a Brian Harman this year in order to be able to win.
But he might, because he's that good.
He is.
He's a hell of a lot better than Brian Harman. So, like, he could very well do it, you know?
Well, but Rory got his Brian Harman waggling and head and checking the ball and checking his line thing going on down the stretch. You could feel it. And that's really weird. That's where the drought comes into play. That's a four-time major champion who's looking over his left shoulder at his sight lines seven times before he hits the ball. He never does that.
He was feeling nerves. But he still put himself off the tee in a lot of great positions. He still put himself where he needed to be.
Yeah.
Like, it's aggravating. It's been a fun show today. Listen, the way it's going to work this week is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, right? Thursday is 4th of July. Like the rest of the country, we will take that day off and celebrate. And then July 5th, I'll take off as well. That's the day after the 4th of July. So we'll have a little four-day weekend for that ass.
I like that. I did finally make it over to France's Tavern this weekend. I'll have you know.
There you go. There
and
you
I
go.
Did get to see the room where George Washington decommissioned the Continental Army, which was cool.
All the men to go and be free. Good job, everybody.
It took forever for the British to get the hell out of Dodge. New York was the final place that they had control over, and they had to have a transition of power. At any rate, it's a lesson for you on a colonial feeling kind of week. It wasn't until November 25th, 1783 that they left. November 25th, 1783, what was known as Evacuation Day, something that the United States celebrated with a parade every year until World War I, when we decided to be pals. And that was the end of Evacuation Day being celebrated.
Kind of fun little nugget there. Nice little kernel. Nicely done at the end of the show. I'm proud of you, Tom. Braves took 2 of 3 from my Buccos. So the season series, Braves fans, dead ass even. I'll shake your hand, you'll shake mine, and we'll leave no better than the other. 3-3. 3-3. You are 3-3. We are. And I will say that my 3-3 feels more frustrating than your 3-3. You're injury riddled. Paul Skeens gave up one run in 7 innings and struck out 9. And couldn't get a win. Couldn't get a win. My frustration is a little different about that 3-3.
We lost 2 out of 3 to the Red Hot Astros. The bullpen's out of arms. It's one of those deals where now you reload, play the Nationals for 4 down in D.C., and they do it right. Here's another thing on a July 4th week. So they start their ball games at 6:45. Love it. That extra half an hour is awesome. Yes. And then on July 4th, we play at 11:05 a.m. Awesome.
Pirates played the Braves yesterday at 11:30 a.m.
That's great.
That's the Roku game. It was in Atlanta. That's the Roku game of the week. That broadcast is fantastic. They take one broadcaster from the Braves, in this case, and one from the Pirates. And they have them do the game together. Oh, how great is that? It was fantastic. And apparently they rotated over and over with everybody like that. So any game you're watching that is the Roku, I don't work for Roku, but if you're watching the Roku game of the week, you got one of the one team, one of the other. They'll take a color analyst from the one team and then the hometown announcer for the other. How about that? Pretty neat. I like that idea, by the way.
That is cool. Well, just if you're going to text me on July 4th and you want a coherent response, do so before about 1:30 in the afternoon, because I'm throwing down with baseball at 11:05 a.m. on Thursday. I'm looking forward to it.
Good work out of you. I'll talk to you later, brother. Be well. That's it for Tom. Thanks to all of you guys in the Heisen Leak Law Firm chat. We really appreciate it. Thanks to you driving about town in Tallahassee. I hope it's going to be a great week. We'll be with you tomorrow with Seminole Headlines. And then I'm back again for the Jeff Cameron Show on a Balls McWednesday before we all get set to celebrate what will be a very long weekend, a ridiculously warm weekend. I'm looking for the deluge. This is the time of the year. We're talking about football being here. I'm looking for the time of the year now where once a day I come home, I look out the window, I go, oh, we're about to get crushed, and then we're gone. All right, till next time. Peace.